I have the privilege of introducing our speaker. It's Les Campbell, who happens to be a local, I would say a local authority on this subject. Les is an educator, and he has been interested in near-death experiences and studying about them and lecturing on near-death experiences for the past 40 years. Most of you have heard of Life After Life, Raymond Moody's book. Les was writing and teaching about near-death experiences before that book even came out. So he's been doing this a long time to thousands of people. We've never had him here at IANS before. I asked Les if he would come and share some insights. He's chosen to talk about some of his favorite insights. Without further ado, let me turn the time over to Les. Thanks very much.
Since the invitation, I've been thinking about a million times different ways to approach this. In life, all of us have our own filters that we've come through. Where we lived, our family, the religion or non-religion, our work, all of these things create filters for us. And when we experience life, books, whatever, movies, we see those things through our filters. Now, we can change our filters a bit. I'm giving you a setup here because my filter, since I was 19 as a Latter-day Saint missionary in Canada, up to the present time, I have taught religion classes, even in the past 15 years since I retired. I taught seminary for 38 years and adult religion classes for another 15 beyond that. That's my filter. The scriptures are my filter. And I may offend you. If I do, I'm not going to apologize, because the truth of what we're speaking about here is the truth. You and I are brothers and sisters. We came from the same family. Therefore, if I call you brothers and sisters, don't be offended. Come up afterwards and give me a hug. I just think that's who I am. And if I had to sterilize myself into not being, and I'm just a robot, get somebody else to come and take up your time. Okay, so one of the things that happened, I feel like I need to give you a really quick background as how I got into this. If Raymond Moody is the father of near-death experiences, then Dwayne Crowther is the grandfather of near-death experiences. Because when Raymond came out with his first edition, Dwayne came out with his 17th edition of his book, and it's got many really good near-death experiences in it. Though it wasn't called that. We don't eliminate that, but that's Dwayne Crowther, Life Everlasting. And so, as I've gone through this turmoil, falling asleep at 3 in the morning, no, I don't want to use that approach, whatever. And I just decided to come in and share what I've got. And then I get a couple of phone calls from David Larson, and he says, Les, could you do a little bit on the pre-existence? It just so happens that I'm also lecturing every Monday for the next 9 weeks now at ElderQuest in Utah Valley, which is a group of retired people that want to keep learning, and they come from all over. And my first 3 lectures down there are on the pre-existence, and he wants me to touch on it. So what you're going to get is a very unique touch. And then I'll go to what I had prepared as far as quotes. And my method is shotgun, not rifle. You should know that almost every quote that I give you, every topic, is an hour and 15-minute lecture out of my files. And no, you can't have them. Okay, so here's just some one-liners about the pre-existence that you can go away knowing, gee, I didn't begin with life in the womb. We'll talk about womb's eye view here later on. Father and mother were there and we saw them. Now, I'm speaking to you. Each one of these can be found in my books, but I just didn't have the time to type them all up. All human and evil spirits coming to earth were a part of our pre-existent family. Lucifer and his followers have no veil. They know all the premortal details about each one of us. Coming to earth through conception in a mother's womb, eventually, and being born, that somehow becomes the veil. Satan and those who followed him in the preexistence came around the mother's womb. They have no veil. Their memories are intact. The war in heaven happened after the earth was created. Now remember, this is all coming from near-death books. There are numerous laws that apply to the preexistence and not to mortality. And every once in a while we bump into one of these, mostly by accident. But it's going to be a real revelation when we find all the laws that govern the universe. The law of attraction assisted spirits in gathering into common interest groups. All of preexistent family of father and mother in heaven. We were there for eons of time, and this law of attraction, we pulled away into separate groups, and we're talking billions of people here, because of the common interests that we have. And we know those people. And as we go down from the huge group into families, when we go through the veil on our way back, we're going to meet all these people in these groups, but more especially those of our own family and own ancestry. They know who we are, and they're watching, they're guiding, they're protecting, and sometimes they are our guardian angels. Children did much of the choosing of parents. Bonds were formed and promises made relative to families on earth. And as much as I have gained on this, I have to conclude that parents, if you're going to divide it 50-50 between children and parents choosing their families, children had a great deal to do with which families they came into. Father and others helped us make promises and covenants about what we would do after gaining mortality. Most of you know this as the plans. Promises not kept is a major reason for many near-deathers being invited to return. We had missions. We had things to accomplish. We just weren't floaters up there. And Father, in his perfect knowledge, assigned or invited or foreordained, whatever word you like, doesn't matter to me, that his children have certain things to do. The motivation is to help his children become like him and our mother. Let me really drive a nail in here for you. We plant tomato seeds in the spring. Are you ever disappointed when you get something besides a tomato, like a carrot or an onion or an apple tree? No, you're not, because it never happens. Because Father has plans even for the seeds. And they have a measure of creation. So when we plant tomato seeds, we expect to get tomatoes. When we see two horses, a male and a female, what are they called? Stallions and mares, thank you. And we see them procreating. We don't go out there and expect to find a donkey or an elephant. We expect to find a horse or a pony. Is Heavenly Father smarter than that? When he plants his seeds, he expects to get children. He got spirit children to start with, and then when we came to the earth, we get mortal children. And that's the law. And I know there are people out there, and I'll save my adjectives to define them, but there are people out there that would divert. I'm sorry. They're wrong. We are the children of heavenly beings. We have been since our birth as spirits, and so has everyone else on this earth. There are many indications that we were allowed to help plan our mortality. This includes receiving physical weaknesses, which we'll read about. Each plan is individually tailored to meet the needs of each spirit child. Now, this may upset some of you, but it's the truth. Father's design is for us to become like him and return into his presence and continue growing. It's part of my filter. But he knows that when he sends his children down to the earth through procreation of a man and a woman, that every single one of us have weaknesses, areas that we need to improve on. And so he designs, and some of our near-death people, some of them locally here, have lectured at this pulpit, have said, yeah, I went back, my near-death experience, and I saw what I needed to do to improve, and Heavenly Father has made that provision for me to develop that weakness into a strength. And we all have them. But that does not mean that we are puppets on the end of a God-held string. Father, God, Om, all that is, whatever name you want to give him, has designed ways for his children to become like him. Sometimes we fight him on it. We always have our free agency to choose to follow the plan or to abandon it. Okay, so our needs are in part filled by what we do with our free agency. Our individual life plans made in the pre-existence eliminate coincidences, big major coincidences. They don't happen in God's plan. Now, there's some little things that may happen along the way that we call a coincidence, but the big life-changing, life-progressing forward type of incidences are not random. They're not coincidental. They're by design. We created friendships in the pre-existence that go back eons and eons of time, and you and I have both read books of people who have met some of these friends that they have known for eons of time. Those are not lost, and they will be picked up, we will be reunited, and we will continue to help each other in our progression. There was no coercion by the Father in getting us to do his will or things his way. We all had free will, but when free will comes, and you and I know this, there's also consequences. You may be in control of your choice, but you are not in control of the consequences of our choices. That's out of our hands, for the most part. We were free to travel the neighborhood, in other words, the universe. When we were spirits in the pre-existence, we could flit around at the speed of light or beyond to our favorite places with our favorite people, doing our favorite adventures. There are near-death people who have written, oh, when I got back there, I was home. I remember doing this and going there. We are all connected with all of Father's creations. The one great whole concept that many, many near-deathers talk about. One great whole or grand whole. Our experiences were designed to help us become gods. Sorry, but that's the way it is, according to the near-death. None of this is coming from scriptures. This is coming out of my near-death markings. Time and age were irrelevant there, except our birth on earth. It was a matter of preparation. Then the womb with a view came. We'll talk about that later. Love prevailed throughout the pre-existence. And one of the things that breaks father and mother's heart and others there, this earth has a spirit. It's a female spirit. It has specific responsibilities and duties that it was given, and she accepted it. Perhaps I'll share more of that later on. All right. Our personalities developed through use of free will along with consequences and behavior adjustments. Now think about this. For eons of time, we've been making decisions. There are always consequences to those decisions. And quite frankly, that's one of the ways that your personality developed. That's who you are. That's who you chose to be. That's who you made yourself into. And those people who blame God are off the mark. Nice cop-out, but it doesn't work. Our personalities are unique. There are no same-o, same-os. We develop talents and earned gifts that we brought with us to this earth. We see it all the time. My grandchildren, I see the beginning of their unfolding, unwrapping of their gifts. Musicians, mathematics, the ability to be empathetic, charitable. The list goes on and on and on and on. We could have a two-hour lecture just on the gifts that we brought with us. Indeed, we are true brothers and sisters in the fullest sense of the word. We agreed to help each other back home. The nature of the spirit world. I knew I was on the outskirts of heaven. Now you remember, these are just a few of the things that have excited me as near-death insights. If you were to leave tonight and I were to go home and say, oh, Les, we have a vacancy for the next 3 months. Could you come back? Literally, and I'm not pulling the wool. I could come back in 3 consecutive months and have more topics. I made a mistake when David called me and got some information for this little blurb on the internet. I've given over 200 lectures, not 80, and I confused him. 200 lectures on 80 subjects, and I'm still filling in. I knew I was on the outskirts of heaven. The breeze was warm and was very much alive. Every time it brushed up against me, it brought with it such an incredible feeling of happiness and peace. The place where we were standing was immense and so beautiful. It was somewhat like the scenery of landscape that we have here on earth, but so much more beautiful and indescribable. There were trees of species I have never seen before, and beautiful beyond words, and in different sizes, and many were just enormous. There were flowers, lakes, and rivers, but on a scale that was incomparable to earthly size and beautiful beyond words and in colors that don't exist here on earth, filling everything with incredible beauty. And the music, oh, the music, it just permeated everything and yet originated from everything. Yes, everything in heaven seemed to create its own music. But I'm not musical. But you will be when you get there. And yet all of the music melded together into such a perfect harmony. I have never heard a melody on earth that compares to it. These harmonies blended back and forth, up and down, in and out, with such incredible music that it overwhelmed my soul. It was alive. Well, I can think of some dead music here, but if you can imagine that, it passed through me and filled me up, quenching every desire, and I knew that I was home. An Army in Heaven by Kelly Jankowski. Musical planets. When I read this for the first time, I became very emotional. It has such a profound insight. I slowly turned away from the earth and quickly escalated to a speed that I knew was very near or surpassed the speed of light. So as I went, I shot by stars and planets, slowing down several times near a particular planet, as if God were allowing me to take in the beauty of His creations. I saw planets that were completely unknown to us on Earth, and when I slowed down and drew near to them, I again heard the most beautiful, delicate music. I intuitively learned that what I was hearing was the music of that particular planet. If we had ears to hear and were in a condition to experience, we would hear all of the planets. singing or humming or vibrating to us their own songs. And then once in a while, I suppose they get into a choir setting, and how would you like to lead that? Saturn, Jupiter, Uranus, you big bellies up there, just kind of slowly fade out, and we'll let Mars and Venus, we'll just bring them in, and just imagine the beauty that Father has created for us. Each one was different, but beautifully composed, ethereal in nature, and by instruments that only vaguely resemble in sound our string instruments, but very similar to the woodwinds like oboes and clarinets. In the background, still in perfect harmony, the tingling of bells shimmered in and out. Wonder if those are the asteroids. Everything that I heard and saw was so completely perfect in its design and composition that I was awestruck. You see, I learned that everything God has created sings praises to Him. You get that all the way through near-death experiences. All of the planets, the stars, every single galaxy, filling the universe with an immense orchestra of praise to God. It's so incredible. I wasn't surprised at the music, only by its incomparable loveliness. Okay, let's learn about Mother in Heaven from the near-death experiencers. Then my memory went farther. The whole plan of life was a pattern of our former life in heaven. I had heavenly parents. There was indeed a heavenly Father and most certainly a Mother in heaven who loved me. I remember them at that moment. It was sacred. The love was so consuming. I felt I would never want to leave. And though I had not known it was possible until that moment, I cried. Yes, I was home. Another one on our mother. In connection with my memory of a premortal life, I realized that I was part of a family that had been around when the earth was formed from matter in the heavens. And I understood how this family had been organized. I knew not only that I had a father in heaven, but a mother in heaven as well. And that every living soul, including Christ, was the offspring of eternal parents. It was the time I had spent living with these parents prior to my mortal birth that I was now being allowed to remember. Stand all amazed by Elaine Durham. I hardly dare utter what I was thinking. Is this God's home? I asked. Yes, answered Larry, one of his friends who hung himself trying to get taller. You know the story of Lawrence Tooley of Lehigh. Had a friend, and he was a short friend, and he was told that if he would put a rope under his chin and stand on a chair, that it would help him stretch and grow taller. The chair slipped, and he hung himself. And now he's meeting his friend, also Larry. So there's two Larrys here. If this is our home, this is our mother's home also, I queried. I've often wondered about her, but never really knew for sure if we really did have a mother here. I said, I wonder why we've never heard more about our mother in heaven. Yes, Larry said, this is her home also. Father knows the limits of our mortal understanding and comprehension. He recognizes that His name is sometimes profaned and trampled upon by His children. I must tell you, this is personal. I am so discouraged when I turn on the TV and see our news commentators and our politicians and others, using sacred names without authority. It just is so offensive to me to hear them talk that way about their father and their brother. He loves and cherishes her above all else. He won't allow her name to be had by the mortal children of his creation, so they can profane her no, nor take her name in vain. Father might forgive all else, but this one transgression would never be forgiven. He considers her to be his equal. This is why the earth was patterned after heaven. Another quote. As we visited each orphanage, I witnessed this same phenomenon over and over. Finally, I begged Mother in Heaven to show me no more. As this feeling surfaced, my Mother in Heaven gently said, "Promise me that when you return, you will be brave, for many of my children suffer. You are far more blessed than these babies in the orphanages, for you have a mother who loves you and cares for you." My Walk Through Heaven by Kim Reeves. Here's some little descriptions that I've taken out of the near death. All words that describe him are inaccurate. God cannot be fooled. There is no Holy Trinity. We can become one with him. God has emotions. God has been taken out of the USA. God has a sense of humor. And there's several manifestations of it, but for the lack of time. God is pure spirit, pure love, pure light, and pure life. God is not to blame for the suffering on this earth. He gave us our free will, and what's here is a consequence of what his children have done. There is no beginning or no end to God's creations. Today, God has been created in man's image, and that's who they worship. God knows all the variables of every situation on this earth. Each God has his own universes. God is in every particle of the universe. All matter has intelligence. There's a whole lot of study there. Okay, I'm going to paraphrase the scripture. There are several accounts of the visions that Enoch had. Get serious about it and you can find them. I'm going to use the account to paraphrase what Enoch says. Enoch is being shown a vision. He sees Mother Earth mourning. And she wants to be relieved of the sins and the burdens of the children that are upon her face. And she says something to the effect, "When will I be free?" She's in pain. It's in Moses chapter 7, verse 48. Okay? There are several versions. Well, I just paraphrased that. Imagine, if you will, a triangle in your brain right here. Put God at the top, man at one side, and Mother Earth at the other side. Now, what I'm going to share with you, to me, is very profound, and it comes from a variety of near-death experiences that have been shared. No coordination. The earth is suffering. One of the things that I was shown through the window of heaven is that the earth is in great pain. Evil in and on the world has become so great that the earth literally feels it. This is in part why there have been and will continue to be, catch the connection here, folks, increased natural disasters, plagues, and other devastation upon the earth now and prior to the second coming of Jesus Christ. The earth is sick. The earth is tired. The earth is weighed down by the sins of mankind. The earth is in need of cleansing. Because of this, there will continue to be upheaval. There will be droughts, famines, floods, storms, pestilences, earthquakes, and other destructive elements will unfold. Continuing the same thing, I was told that God knew this earth's environmental destruction would occur and was deeply saddened by it. However, he knew this was part of the evolution of perfect will. When God engineered the planet, he secured in its existence through self-protective mechanisms, including tsunamis and hurricanes and volcanoes and climate changes, etc. That comes from John Lerma, one of my favorites. Another near-deather. As these constructs and pollutions of man spread across the globe, they cover the land with darkness, and the earth responds with upheavals, devastation, floods, famines, pestilence, and death. All of this is like a blanket of darkness that spreads itself across the face of the earth, dimming the light of Christ that reaches the earth. This diminishes the power that keeps the earth orderly and fit, and a fit habitation for mankind. There is a process given to the earth whereby it cleanses itself when evil overtakes it. Natural disasters, plagues, and upheavals begin in random places. When evil on the earth becomes so great that the light of Christ is dimmed, it will produce eruptions, extremes of weather and temperature, storms, floods, earthquakes, and other destructive events. There is a direct correlation between the choice of mortals and the condition of the earth. This is why there will be so many natural disasters and death caused by the acts of nature in the latter days, because mankind by then will have veiled the earth in darkness. This isn't to say that the earthquake or flood is aimed like a missile at the evil or the places where disasters happen needed cleansing the most. The whole of humanity suffers when darkness reigns. Okay, ladies, this is what you came for. The womb with a view. Got several quotes here. After watching the spirits trying to corral these two young people, I've got a quote here about Cupid, but I probably won't get to it. My attention turned to other spirits making preparations to go to Earth. One exceptionally brilliant and dynamic spirit was just entering his mother's womb. He had chosen to enter this womb mentally handicapped. He was very excited about this opportunity and was aware of the growth that he and his parents would achieve. And you know, I don't think we understand that in our world today. It's sad. The three of them had bonded with each other and planned for this arrangement long before he chose to begin his mortal life at his body's conception. And I watched the spirit move into the womb and enter the newly formed life. He was anxious to feel the great love of his mortal parents. I may never come back again, so I'll tell it like I feel it. Those who are trying to restrict abortion, if they only knew that every single one of those spirits had spent eons of time creating their personality, developing friendships, earning talents and gifts that they were so excited to come to the earth and share, and they don't get one second of satisfaction because of people on this earth who think they know so much and they know so very little when it comes to the relationship between a man and a woman, conception, and the partnership of father and mother on the other side. I would hate to be in their shoes. I have to tell you, this is where that whole title comes from. I'll paraphrase it. Conception takes place. Sometime the angel, escort angel, brings him to his mother. This is Roy Mild. And pushes him into her womb. It's a great story. Soul's remembrance. And anyway, he talks about adjusting and all of the bumps and all of the noises and all of it. Because he can hear with his own little teeny ears as he progresses. But he also hears his mother's, what she hears. And then he makes a fascinating comment. He says, once in a while, I would look at the earth through my mother's eyes. And I could see what she saw. Wow. I can hardly wait to get there, but I don't have a death wish. This is PMH Atwater. She was one of the early researchers and writers. I have found that interviewing children can be as surprising as it is revelatory. For children seem able to hear parental conversations while still in the womb and can repeat them when older. Conversations while still in the womb and can repeat what was heard once they are old enough to talk with embarrassing exactness. Here's a beautiful one I love. Jesus reached down, took me by the hands, and stood me up in front of him. He looked at me, he looked through me, and then he smiled. And immediately I was completely cleansed. All of my sins, my failures, my inability to be patient, loving, and caring were gone. All of my unworthiness and every stain of sin were completely gone. An Army in Heaven by Kelly Jankowski. All right.
I want to make one observation less about Roy Mills. We had him here a number of years ago. Roy is an interesting individual. He didn't have that veil. He could remember back from before he was born.
And one little attachment to that. We learned from Roy's book that one of the desires that he had in the premortal existence was to reveal the phenomenon of near-death experiences to the world. He got a commitment from Father and others, and when the time was right, and he had a near-death experience, never shared it. But when the time was right, he was told, come out with your story and put it in a book. It's a fascinating book. Soul's Remembrance. I'm just going to make a comment without reading three or four quotes. There are indeed people on other planets that we have visited and that near-death experiencers have visited, and we're kind of like related. Concept of everything being in one great whole. Everything. Sand, water, trees, birds, dinosaurs. We're all part of one great whole. And we will see that. Choosing life challenges. We had the opportunity, Lynn's story here, most of you have heard, where he's in the spirit world, in the pre-existence, and he's sitting in a classroom, and the instructor angel down on there, he's got a piece of chalk, I guess, and he writes on the board, cystic fibrosis. He doesn't know what it is. And the angel says, we need a volunteer. And he sees himself now. He's having a near-death experience from what happened back beyond the other side of the veil. And he sees himself raise his hand saying, I'll do it. Then when he gets down here on the earth and the consequences of his joy and the pain and all those other things, why am I here? Why am I suffering? What's going on? And he's allowed to have a near-death experience where he goes back and sees himself make this decision and volunteer. And then he's taught, you learn things the slow way, like you and I are, or you learn things the fast way through pain and suffering, and you can accelerate your need for being here. Books and libraries, how'd like you walk into a library that is as large as Washington, D.C. Each building, one subject. And in one unique library, there are records from other Earths. Kind of like a book on loan thing. We can go there and we can find out how things are doing or how they were on other planets where people were. Mansions. The mansions that you are going to have in heaven, you are building today and built yesterday and the day before and next week. And you know what the blocks are? What good have you done to other people? For other people? With other people? That's the blocks. And the mortar, according to one, the mortar is all of the prayers that we have offered in behalf of those who need our prayers. Mansions. Grandpa is dead. Granddaughter has a near-death experience. And she sees her grandpa in this kind of like little apartment room. And she says, Grandpa, where's your mansion? And he says, I am waiting for Grandma to come so we can build it together. Oh, that's just fascinating. Okay, I'll end with this. When we were standing looking down on a beautiful road that led into the city, when suddenly, this is in the spirit world, we were surrounded by people. I instantly knew who they were, although many I had forgotten about on earth. They were all cheering, welcoming me joyously. Each and every one of them hugged me. And there were so many of them. I saw neighbors and friends, my brothers and sister. A man I gave $20 to on the street, and countless more. I saw a man had come across on the street in the dead of winter, who was too weak to move. I covered him with a blanket, and he was burning with fever, frostbitten, and reeked of the streets. I offered him hot coffee, but he was too weak to take even a small sip. I called EMS and stayed with him, holding him in my arms while we waited. He asked me to pray with him. So we prayed the Lord's Prayer, but he died in my arms before the ambulance arrived. I had often thought of him. There he was, radiantly beautiful and perfectly whole. Random act of kindness will get us a long ways.
We're ready for questions.
So when does the spirit go into the womb? As soon as it's conceived? Or
no. Come listen to my lecture on the womb's view. We get into that. I've got one quote. I never shared it. At different times, when they are ready and when mother is ready and her body. One, he wanted to be a total participant. He says the day that he was conceived, he was there because he wanted to enjoy it at all. And others have said later, come and go. I've got one. You know, come out and go in, come out and go in. But then there's a certain point where you stop coming out.
I hope this isn't offensive, but one of
my
favorite scriptures is in the LDS Doctrine and Covenants 88 section. I think it's 45-ish verse, but it talks about the different time frames and the orbits of the moon, earth, and sun, and it ends by saying, anyone who's seen these has seen God moving in his majesty and power. It's one of my favorites, and what you've shared with us tonight builds on that beautifully.
For sure, for absolute certainty.
Anyway, this has really been wonderful, and I appreciate you coming.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You haven't touched on this, but I'm wondering if you might address animals.
Come to my lecture next year on animals. Yes, in the spirit world, you can be reunited with your pets. But you need to remember, they have free will, and if you have been mean to them, they have the opportunity to reject you. Yeah, you'll have some downtime with your pets when you get there.
Yes. Do you have three or four favorite books of the near-death experiences?
Gerhard, you know I don't.
Yeah, you do.
In my top 10 favorite books are 25 books. And that changes almost on a weekly basis, because when I first read my first near-death experiences back in the late 60s, long before Moody ever came out with his, I was so naive about what near-death experiences were, et cetera, et cetera. But then as I started to purchase the books and Laura, stand up. There was a time a few years ago when my daughter Laura was ill, and I had notebooks. I was going to do this. But she typed up all 8 ring binders. Okay? Page after page, alphabetical. That's the way my whole process started. And she typed them all up, alphabetical, and brought together the 8 books. Gaze into Heaven, Soul's Remembrance.
By whom?
Marlene Sullivan, Soul's Remembrance by Roy Mills. It's just so hard for me, because there's so many different reasons to have a favorite book. Life Everlasting. The first book I ever read was Life Everlasting by Dwayne Crowther. He's still alive, kind of feeble, but he's there.
His daughter, as I recall, died early, didn't she? That's kind of what got Dwayne going.
My wife was their babysitter when he taught seminary in Burley, Idaho. And his son is now a counselor in the bishopric in my ward. We're connected. Yes.
Two questions, if you don't mind. Number one, is there communications between us and animals back and forth?
Yes.
Number one. And the other question is, you made the statement of different universes and different planets. I would assume by that question, all beings and all universe, everything like that, all are the same.
Yeah. All this nonsense that's made billions and billions of dollars from Hollywood about monsters and aliens with 3 eyes and 1,600 horns, or whatever it is, it's all nonsense. All spirit beings on all planets, on all universes, and indeed there are more than one, were created in the image of their God. Now, if there are some life forms that we haven't been exposed to, that's fine. But when they talk about aliens coming to the earth, we may be visited, but they're like us. And the only exception I can make, and I can't say it truthfully because I'm not there, as we progress, maybe we drop off some of the body functions and body parts that we need it here, but we don't need there. And that would be my caveat.
Thank you for being here. would you elaborate just briefly on guardian angels?
Yes.
That you alluded to?
No problem.
Thank you.
Every single human being that comes to this earth has a guardian angel, sometimes more than one at a time. And oft times, this is in the literature, which you will read about grandpas and grandmas and family members who precede us in death, and they are given the choice to come back and watch all our foibles, even when we're in the shower. So, yeah, guardian angels, everybody has one. And you'll be one too when you get there.
So I wonder why everybody has their own unique, different near-death experience. Some people go through tunnels, some people go different places, some people hear a screaming, you know, in certain rooms, like this is the hell, and I've heard just so many different.
And there
unique.
Are a lot of different ones.
Yeah, why don't we all have the same near-death experience?
I could give you a couple of examples or explanations. Number one, I'll just mention to you, because you all know it, what is it, the six men of Hindustan who explored the elephant, and they all thought they knew what an elephant was, but they all had a different body part. It's exactly the same way with near-death experiencers. We can only comprehend to the level that we have arrived at. And so when people start sharing near-death experiences, they're only given that information that they qualify for. Oh, that's a whole nother lecture. The light, the qualification of revelation that they've taught us. So, to some degree, we control. Now, you remember when I talked about filters at the very beginning? You all have their filters. You all have filters, and these people who go and have a near-death experience are seeing it from a certain view, and then you've got to know that there are filters from the other side. They're saying, you can see this, but no more. And sometimes, they have these experiences, they know they had them, they come back into their bodies, just take it away from them. Not to be shared. Right now.
From all your research and all your information that you've sought, what can you tell us to understand how eternal gender is? I mean, it's a heavy question. I don't want to be offensive, but I am baffled by what I see. So I just wonder if you have any insight on that.
If God created it, it's perfect. It's eternal. That's as simple as I could get. In our hustle-bustle world, it's not normal. There's another experience that maybe we had earlier where there weren't so many distractions. If it weren't for all of the distractions in our world, maybe we would be uncluttering our mind and opening it up to receive more, because I know there is more. Of that I am certain. We just get so cluttered.
I understand that when Jesus Christ atoned for us here on earth, he also atoned for all of the intelligent beings created on all of the other worlds as well.
That he created. He did not create all the worlds. The worlds that he created were within the stewardship that his Father gave to him. It does not make sense to say, well, Jesus, now you go down there and you create that world, but I'm going to get somebody else to come in and die for him. That's so ridiculous. But at the same time, there are other worlds that we know not of, who may belong to other gods, our Heavenly Father's brother or uncle. See, where does it stop? It never stops.
Recently, in the last few months, I've been counseling widows and widowers who have lost loved ones, and they hope that their loved ones who are in the spirit world will change personalities and do some growing in certain areas. I wonder if there's any resource regarding how can people change, or do they change, and is there a need for the change, and so forth, so forth.
One of the greatest factors in changing people's lives in the near-death phenomenon is called the life review, where people see every word, every thought, every deed. And I'm being truthful here. And that appears 20 to 30 times in the literature. Every word, thought, and deed. So you go through the veil, and then, oh my goodness. And some of them have seen clear back to when they were in the womb. Their birth. How they treated their siblings. People at school. And it goes on and on and on. That's all recorded. And then when you look at it, well, how do you feel about that? You want to make a change? And people are allowed to make a change. There is repentance. There is forgiveness beyond the veil.
Thank you for coming tonight. We've really enjoyed your insights. This is a kind of a corny question, but I'm curious.
I can match an answer.
Okay. As a vegetarian...
I'm close.
On the other side of the veil, do you meet the critters you've eaten?
Of course.
What a question.
You must not if you're meeting them. There is a thing that comes out in the near-death literature. It's called the measure of your creation. Everything that Father creates has a measure, has a purpose, has a design, has a plan. And believe it or not, the animals are happy if you eat them, because that's part of the measure of their creation. We don't understand that. That's one of those laws that I talked about before. So, yeah, it's okay. Animals are very forgiving, so are fruits and vegetables. Truly, truly. Folks, it is so simple.
There's a lot of talk about that we come back again to the earth. One of my things is that, could it be possible that we were guardian angels to people and we are with them the whole time until it's ready for our time? Because that's the only way I prayed about it, and that's what came to me, was that I'm with somebody up until their death, and I might go to several different people at different times and know every single thing about them, and then it's my time to come on earth, I have a memory.
You bring those memories with you. Exactly. Right on. Let me give you another approach to reincarnation. I am a believer in Jesus Christ. I believe he atoned for my sins. Would you mind telling me, Mrs. Reincarnationist, would you mind telling me which earth experience he's going to atone for? You can't. So that either says reincarnation is true, or Jesus Christ's atonement is true. And you know who I'm picking. There's a lot. I have a lecture, but I haven't given it for 3 or 4 years, on reincarnation. Because where did it all start? It started back with Near Eastern religions. And I will just say this. I am a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Okay? I haven't been to a general conference ever where I've heard a prophet or a member of the Quorum of the 12 or the 70 get up and praise reincarnation. If it were true and a part of our existence, why aren't they talking about it? It's because it's not. It's a fraud. You got the real me.
Yes, there's another question over here.
Over where?
Right here. I'm your son. So,
literally,
I'm asking this to my father in a public situation so that he doesn't personalize the answer for me as a kind of a skeptic. So, just to set the scene.
It doesn't matter. You are what you are. You choose to be what you choose to be.
And that's the question. The question I want to ask is...
Oh, you got a question?
I do have a serious question. The question I ask is we have this grand plan and this grand design, but at the same time we also have agency, and that's a constant theme in everybody's lives is, where does the design end and where does the agency start? And like from There's a scene in a movie called Benjamin Button where his girlfriend walks out the door and goes, gets the mail and crosses the street and then ends up getting hit by a car. And it's a great 5-minute scene about the process of all the little decisions she made along the way that put her in the situation where she broke her leg. And if she would have just made one
movie, son.
No, if she just would have made one small change. And as we have, like, I don't know how many billions of people we have bouncing like ping pong balls out of mousetraps, and the chaos and the entropy and the probability, it just seems like the design is that, and we're left to make the choices and decisions as we bump into each other. But the micro decision making is ours, but maybe the macro planning is somebody else's. Can you address that in the near death? That's pretty esoteric, but I've been thinking about that quite a bit.
Yeah, we all have our free agency. Father respects that. Even though he knows we're going to mess up, he lets us do it because there is growth. I do not believe in coincidences in major directions of our progression. No, I don't. And neither do many near-deathers. If you stop and think about coincidence, folks, what does that really tell us? Number one, our Father in heaven is not our creator. He's not in control. He's just letting us bounce around and, oh, whatever happens, happens, nilly-willy. That's not my Father. Can be yours, but not mine.
I have two questions if I can ask. The first one, is there different degrees of the spirit prison? Or
yes.
Okay.
And after you get out of spirit prison and start going up, they're all many, many, many levels, spheres, and realms. Let me just tell you, really, this is so good to me. There was a man and a woman, and they were unequally matched, spiritually or near-death-wise, and the man had been given permission to advance to a higher level. And he says, no, I'm going to stay with my wife until she's ready to join me. There's just so much out there that we just walk through life and made me appreciate my wife. But she's going to say, danged if I will, I'm getting out of here. And he, your second question.
I can understand when you say you went to have a near-death experience and went to paradise and having your memory restored to you, remembering the pre-existence. Yeah, yeah. But what about where you went to the spirit prison? Would you have your memory stored at that time or not?
Yeah, why not? If Father is no respecter of persons, he would allow people who have not been so good to have a review, and it has an effect. And I know, I was here one night when Howard Storm was here. You know his book? He saw a bit of hell, but it changed his life. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're allowed to see evil, hell, whatever you want to call it. It may bring some of us back. And when we have near-deathers come, and they present their ideas, hopefully it has a positive effect on us, and we want to make life changes.
I feel the closest to God on earth by the oceans. Of course, when you know, I live where there's absolutely none. But you were saying that the Mother Earth, she gets so sad because of just all the oil spills and all the horrible things and the forest fires and just, you know, construction and just everything that happens on the Earth.
Wait, let me correct it. She's not sad because of them. She's sad because of the human beings who have caused them.
Oh.
And she's using those oil spills and what's the latest virus out of China? And fire, Australia, oh my goodness. She uses those for this reason, at least one that I've discovered, is when we have hard times in our lives, we humble ourselves. And when we humble ourselves, we are teachable.
But is she also very happy when there are real groups out there that go out and pick up trash and clean things up and reseed forests and, you know.
Exactly. You're right. You're right in the bullseye. And out of the Old Testament, what does it say about our crops, their crop? There's a spirit that, replenish is a good word. We are so interconnected on this planet, it would take us thousands and thousands of years to begin to discover the basis of it, let alone the full extent.
Well, we appreciate you coming. We thank all of you for coming.